is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. My guest today is Jesper Zerlang, CEO of LogPoint. Today we're going to be talking about SIEM, SOAR and how they're going to evolve to deal with a whole host of new challenges in cybersecurity. Jesper, welcome. Do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Thank you for having me. I'm Jesper. I'm the CEO here at LogPoint. I've been CEO for 12 years and have been at the head of LogPoint since we decided to be a full-blown SIEM vendor, which was a decision we made in 2012.
Why the decision to become a full-blown SIEM vendor? It's a very busy, very full market when you look at the number of big vendors.
If you go back and look at the heritage of LogPoint, we actually started out in 2005 as a cybersecurity consultancy company. We had a 360 consultancy, small company operating in Denmark and Sweden, and had about 70 customers, of which one of them were IKEA worldwide, working with pen testing and other general cybersecurity solutions. It became evident that there was at that time, basically 2009 and 10, a need for more advanced log management solutions. We ended up acquiring a small company out of the city of Copenhagen University. This startup was doing log management. We took the platform and said, these guys really are onto something. And we then saw that players like Splunk, Q1 Labs, now QRadar, and ArcSight were on the rise in the US, and there were no players in Europe. So we thought, okay, this is our chance. This is a blind spot on the map. And we decided to take this platform and augment it from being log management to full SIEM.
Has that helped you from a European perspective? Because American companies have the money. They tend to dominate very easily into a market. Have you found people have said, oh, we want a European-based company because we think they'll understand our culture?
Very relevant question and very clear answer. Most certainly. There's a lot of cultural differences, but there's also a different view on what is cybersecurity. We all know with GDPR that we also have a higher standard in terms of personal data protection. It's not a generic GDPR interpretation. There is a version for the German market, for the French market, and the Nordic markets, and we have embraced this. We really want to work with a localized version of LogPoint. Also, we have our website in the different languages, and I think this is where we differentiate from the US. It's not a one-size-fits-all, but it's actually listening to the markets. It's not only that we service the markets, but the product is actually agile because we had to develop it to be able to adjust and fit into these different areas.
Listening to markets is a challenging thing because that delay between hearing something from a customer, producing a product plan, productizing it, testing it and shipping it, by the time you've done that, it's not what the customer wants at all. He's completely forgotten what he asked for at the beginning. How do you respond quickly enough to get it to them before they've moved on to the next thing?
Because we started small, because we started on a very, very small financial footprint, we started on $2 million, where our colleagues in the US, they start on maybe $50 million or $100 million. We were forced to listen to the customers and in the beginning deliver what they asked for. It gave us very early that we needed to say, okay, we need to be king of data. The structure and architectural design of the platform is very clean because we needed to make sure that data could go in any direction and we can do analytics on any direction very fast. We could not show a list of 500 different systems we supported from day one, but we told the customers we support these and then we give you 10 extra for free and we'll just develop them. Now, of course, we've grown 10 years and have a full suite, but it really meant that our agility and ability to really respond quickly to these market demands is now a very large strength when we have to adapt to some of the even bigger things.
Let's come back to culture a minute here. When we look at the culture of cybersecurity, we've got a history of just gathering a lot of data and then throwing a lot of stuff to people and saying, this is what we see. But we live in a world where if you look at the number of data points that every vendor talks about, it's in the billions. Well, we can't just throw that at customers. We've got to change the culture of how we respond to companies. As you say, you tend to respond by what they ask for. Are you seeing the cultural approach to cybersecurity making it much more business-focused rather than technology-focused?
With the events that have happened over the recent 18 months in the global economy, the crisis in Ukraine, some of the COVID impacts, is that us in the cyber industry have really longed to get cyber on the real agenda and not just an item in the IT department, but something that was really at the core of businesses. And then, of course, adding all the big attacks of ransomware all over the world. Cyber, if you ask any board, it is one of the top three topics they talk about. This is different. This has never been like this before. Now you have not only the willingness to pay attention, you also have the money. And the reason is if you want to survive today, COVID taught us, if you thought you were digital, a lot of companies are not. Not at all. With the remote work and everything, they have just scratched the surface. So now it's a new agenda, and they need to say, if we do not digitize and do this in a 10x or 100x speed, we will not survive. But they realize that comes with a huge risk, that if you do not apply a proper cyber strategy underneath or in parallel with this, you have big problems. We are being invited much more into the management side of things, discussing what is it we're trying to protect. It's not whether a new device XYZ is now a part of your solution. It's how do we survive as a company and what is really the problem. This becomes the norm of the people, process, technology discussion. There's much more on the people side and the process side, and not only technology. It goes without saying technology has to be really relevant, fast, and so on. But the business focus, it's not about saving a dollar here or there, and it's not about buying everything on the shelf and then you are protected. It's really understanding, so dear vendor, show me, how does it work when we get breached? Or we get breached often. I heard it's not if and when, everybody talked about that, now it's how many. You do get breached. So we need to really have this, and it's the top of the business agenda. This is the cool part from our side, because you get into a much more relevant discussion, and the customers also get a better solution.
What does that mean for the future, Siemens? Or we said at the beginning, this is the sort of thing we talk about. Because historically, we've been a technical solution to a technical problem for technical people. If we're going to be a business solution to a business problem for business people, that's a very, very different approach to the technology. It's an approach to how we integrate within the business, and it's a very different approach to what we think about our own products. What has to change from where we are now to meet that business focus?
One thing that's evident is that it tends to be the bigger companies, larger enterprises, that have the capacity internally to have their own SOC and apply these technologies to a certain extent. But the biggest challenge is, of course, the small, medium enterprises. Companies from 500 employees to maybe 20,000 employees, they need automation. And they need to have a partner where they can basically buy this as a service. There is no way they can hire the people required. If they do, they cannot retain them. And keeping up with the technology is also very, very difficult. I think that it will be more and more of a service play. The MSSPs of the world and MDR, the managed detection response players, would really grow in size. We will see telcos playing a much bigger role because they actually have access and understand what is 24/7 and availability, what does that mean, versus a traditional IT reseller might not really know what this means. We as a vendor have to provide solutions. The customer don't really care whether it's Logpoint or another vendor. They care about a relevance to support their own business. They want, just as you buy electricity or lights, it's a flip of a switch. You need to buy security as a service so you feel comfortable that you are protected when you are being breached.
Security has never been sold as a utility. It's always been sold as, here's a brick wall you can put up to protect something coming in. The problem is, in those early days of building that brick wall, we had big offices. We had big IT setups. We could build those firewalls and we could protect it. And then we discovered once they got in, we were really soft and jelly and they could move freely. Now everybody's working from home, at least part of their time. What do we need to do to adapt to accommodate the fact that there are no longer boundaries to an organization?
It's a very good question. It's a challenge that needs to be solved. There's not a silver bullet. It's a process. I would almost characterize, if we go back in the days and you look at a city that is protected by big gates, you can go in and out and that's how you control the access. There's no gates in cities today. Everybody can flow back and forth, but you now have traffic regulations and we have a unspoken way of behaving. And it's not somebody who actually regulates it. That's the beauty of big metropolitans. It just works almost. The same will happen in IT infrastructures. We want to create environments where data flows. We can have technology powered by AI and machine learning and automated processes that will take out all the bad stuff and have all the good stuff flow more freely. And of course, this is a process. Technology will solve this. Right now, it can be kind of daunting to see all this data, and especially working from home, you now into the enterprise networks, you get all these potential malwares from your kids playing games and a lot of things going on in your home IP environment. That's a lot of pollution. You already fill into the enterprise. You need very agile solutions that can take all this data, and ingesting the volumes of data should not be a restraint. This is why also cloud environments are growing so fast, because you can just apply more data to it. It comes with another security aspect of being in the cloud, but that's a different discussion. But you want all data, because you're only as strong as your weakest link. Something from a remote office can just ruin a whole business if you're not careful.
But there's a cost issue here. If we're talking about data that the business acquires, that the business will later mine, model, and hopefully find new opportunities from, data is not a cost center, data is a profit center. When we look at data from an IT perspective, especially this pollution that's coming from people being at home, data is a cost center. Data is a never-ending cost center. Cybersecurity is a black hole that will suck all the money you can throw at it for time immemorial. How do we put guardrails on that? Guardrails that mean we can effectively budget the security, that we can improve what we do, but we don't end up losing sight of protecting the business, because the business mentality is on that cost.
I think we need to go and look to the software robots, the AIs that we're all creating. It's a technology thing. No way a human being can see a mid-sized company can generate 10 billion logs during a week. How do you find the 30 relevant ones? We need to have some computer-aided stuff here. It can only be solved by technology. This is also the race going on and why we invest so much in these automated processes. And then it's making sure there's a lot of data that we can just delete. Let's not be too afraid of this. There's this thing that we have to collect and keep everything forever. There is a lot of irrelevance, and we need to be more bold in saying we don't need this data. Just delete it, get rid of it, or extract the security attributes of a given data source, but delete the original data source. You don't need it anymore, but you need the attributes for your machine learning algorithms to learn from this. And this, you can cut your data storage by 30, 40, 50%.
Where do you balance that with computer forensics? One of the challenges when we get attacked is hopefully we learn from it. The point where we learn the most is when we do a proper forensic examination of an attack. That doesn't happen in so many cases. But if we're going to throw data away that we no longer need, we have to be able to clearly have a limit to the time we keep it so that we can go back to an attack, but also make sure we don't throw away what will be essential learning data down the line. Is that a clear line at the moment, or is there an awful lot of fuzziness that we've yet to learn about?
Is very fuzzy. It also comes to who are talking here. Is it the experts? If you take the state-sponsored attack, that's of course a different story versus attacking a small service industry in the middle of nowhere. It's about relevance. If you are a general business, there's a lot we can do. It will keep the business alive. That is priority number one. But if you really want to talk about protecting society and protect against the perfect storm, then of course you have a different scenario, which is a big headache for protecting a nation. Because there you need all the telco data, you need so much data. Data is massive. Maybe quantum computing and other technologies will accelerate how we can control all this data. But I'm sure technology, if I say in 50 years, is probably going to be in 25 years or 15 years, would give us an ability as human beings to actually control this data in a way that we cannot imagine today.
Looking at controlling that data requires knowledge. And one of the knowledge parts of that, as you said, is the AI ML. But those systems are prone to pollution of their own. You start it down the wrong line of learning, and suddenly it becomes a self-defeating proposition, because all it learns is the wrong thing. How do we remove those biases from our AI and ML learning, and how do we do a better job of not just making sure they're technically focused, but making sure that the responses make sense to the business?
We need to go to different industries to see what this is. The way I see ML and AI is almost like if you're a captain of an airplane. You still have a captain and you have a co-pilot, but we don't need them. They could take off and land and fly, and it would be just as good without these guys. We need to provide enough clean data to the guys who pushes the buttons. And they need to be trained. They need to be having the human eye on what is right to do here and what is wrong to do. Because if you automate everything, you can shut down a business and it's a false positive and you'll be in real bad shape. And the attackers could play on this. That's also why we see all this honeypot technology where you do shadowing networks and so on, which is quite fascinating of how this is growing. If you talk about the top 5% or 10%, complexity is indefinite and really complex. But if you take the 90% of society and how we protect this, technology today can really bring us from being zero protected to 80-90%, almost at a click of a button.
So why is it taking so long to get there? What is so hard for people to click that button to get us to that level of protection?
It is because we are still the one-eyed king in the land of the blind in cybersecurity. Cybersecurity, to many people, is something super complex. This is a human behavior. They just turn the blind eye instead of trying to talk about what is it. We have so many customers, and unfortunately, they reached out when it's too late. They've been down for a week. They almost lost their business. Now they listen. And they go, wow, is this all we had to do? You could talk the very simple stuff about patching and training your people and simple stuff. Probably 80%, if I'm just anecdotal, of cyber attacks today are super simple. It's not very complex. It is possibly also a generation thing. The younger generation will come up and say, of course we need to talk about cyber. They don't fear the new. It's a basic human thing. That's the reason why we haven't seen dramatic things. Just take COVID, for instance. Everybody in the world knew that science for 15 years been yelling and screaming about this day will come where there's a virus. You had organizations all over the world preparing. But the guys that were pushing the buttons said, no, it's never going to happen. Then it happens and you don't know what the hell is going on. I've always said we need a 9/11 in cybersecurity before the world really will listen. COVID has given us a direction that this is something you need to take serious. But the real big thing is that we need to see some detrimental business, unfortunately. We really say, oh, is this really possible?
But we're seeing part of that with the wave of ransomware attacks we've got at the moment, or cyber extortion, as they should more correctly be referred to. And we're seeing it with the takedown of organizations, where we're now shifting from simply ransoming their data back to them to actually wiping the data, even though they've paid a ransom, and then attacking them again at a later point. If that's not serious enough to get people over that 9/11 barrier, what would be serious enough?
Looking to Europe, the passing of the NIS2 directive that happened 2 or 3 weeks ago is going to be like a GDPR for cybersecurity. Critical organizations need to have a documented implementation of cybersecurity defenses. And if you do not have it, you get a fine, just like GDPR, of up to 2% of your revenue. This will make us as human beings change behavior. We are back to the basic. We have to bring it into the universities, into the schools. We need to preach it to the new generation, because those of us that are 50 plus, forget it, we are lost, unless you work in the industry. I have so many people, even in my personal network, that come to me. First of all, they start talking about their private passwords. It's so basic, and I'm thinking, how come they don't know? They know so much more about politics. They know much more about education and all this. But cyber, it's just something that is out there happening to your neighbor.
But people like the idea of a black box, because they don't have to think. They put it in, it does what it needs to do, and it's all gone away. Taking them out of those box environments is frightening for them, and people will do anything to avoid something that scares them. So how do we get them out of that environment without just making it a technical solution? Because it can't just be a technical solution. But we have to get them out of there in a way that works for them. And at the moment, our attempts to just educate people is a clumsy mechanism.
We need to address this in multiple areas. From a political perspective, there's a lot of good initiatives. For instance, governments in a lot of countries now are seeing this need for working collectively and have a community-based approach to the cyber topic. Because another thing that's kind of crazy is that the hackers, they do not know borders. But we build out a lot of information in each country around Europe. Why don't we join forces much more? It cannot be with the normal EU bureaucracy where it takes 2 or 3 years from you start an idea to you execute. It needs to be something you can execute on. You talk about it on Monday and you have to execute in 3 months. That needs to happen, of course. Then it's about companies being forced to bring it to the agenda, because if it's not being brought to the daily agenda, nothing will happen. I am puzzled myself on what needs to take place, because to me it's so evident, and I really feel for the scientists about the COVID situation, because they've known for so long and they've been yelling and screaming about it. And what did I say? We had the same situation within cyber.
But if we look at the goal of the NIST2, which is you've got to have these plans, this is in many ways no different to when we started building nuclear power stations. We had to have plans. We have to test a nuclear power station. We have to test a railway system before we put it in. We do that through formulaic methods. We do it through a degree of science. We do it to a degree of engineering. We don't just create a technology solution that's a general solution and throw it at them to say it will work. How are we going to assess the effectiveness of those plans? And again, if we come back to SEAMSOAR, UEBA, all these tools that we have, how do we make these tools much more effective in that pre-attack scenario?
The most important thing is seeing is believing. We as a vendor will be forced to show the customers before they invest, how is this going to work on my data? Show me a scenario where this happens. how would your solution through automation show me what happens? Let's take a ransomware attack. If you do not have SIEM and SOAR implemented properly, it could be a process. You click on the link, you get compromised, and it will take 3 to 5 to 7 days if you're really quick in a mid-sized organization to find out what has happened. Through automation, this can be cut down to maybe 15 minutes or 20 minutes because you can have an automated playbook that says, if this happened, the research and the investigation, it's all digital. And a computer is very good to working with numbers. So creating an automated process when somebody clicks and then back to my autopilot, you can shut down these two or three areas that have been hit and everything is safe. If we had taken this to a level of the COVID example again, instead of shutting down a country, you could shut down these two cities where you actually have the breach. We don't, because we didn't have any preparedness. SOAR has been the component that is now so mature, it's adding the value that many customers have been frustrated about in terms of SIEM solutions the last 5 years, because they were big, expensive, difficult to operate, and you created a lot of false positives. You have all these alerts, what do you do with it? Well, SOAR can actually sort this for you and can give you a priority list of saying, okay, if you take these are our priorities from a business perspective, you can then map in and say, okay, SOAR will then give you, if this is all the time you have, these are the things you should investigate. And I think that will be the first step of many of how the technology can provide tangible solutions that really add value to protecting the business.
But if we look at that technology, we have boundaries at the moment. We understand endpoints. We understand servers. To a degree, we understand software and its behavior. And I say to a degree because there's a lot that we don't really understand about it. We take on trust. We know there are other devices that we see that are typically IP connected, anything from cameras connected from security, which are outside of our control, through to printers, scanners, to coffee machines, to refrigerators, to TVs like the one on the wall behind you. But then we have a whole bunch of technologies that are not IP related, that we don't really gather much information about, only when they tangentially touch our IP networks. When we think about those industries that things like NIST2 are targeted at, those technologies have to be included in how our SIEM and SOAR identify, log, and interpret the data. What have we got to do to get there? Because there's so much missing at this moment.
First of all, I totally agree. And the way it's still in its infancy in terms of how to incorporate these IoT and SCADA environments that are very complex, as to your point, a lot of old systems that was not built for either IP, let alone security. We have to go back, and this is maybe where we have a slight advantage, that we know we've been good at ingesting unknown components. To us, it's about what we take all these different sources and we normalize the data so that everything is translated into one common taxonomy that we can do analytics on. So what we need to do is one of two things. Either we ingest the data and normalize this into our current language, or we integrate with somebody that creates a solution that is better at translating the data from these environments. And it's probably the latter one that is going to be the prevailing one, because it doesn't make sense to create this amount of data and throw it into something where we translate something that's binary into something that's text-based. It will just create a massive amount of unnecessary compute and storage requirements. We need to, and this is another principle of Logpoint, let's move a lot of the discovery out to as close to where data is generated as possible. That's going to be our approach. Another approach is we will work through partnership with this, because this is an area we need to be an expert. We're working with companies like SCADAfence and others that are very good at understanding of these environments, and then we make the best of both worlds.
Part of that understanding also requires discovery. Part of our problem of discovering this now very wide view of devices is that some things will pop up and some things might not message for days or weeks or months. And when they do, it's a critical message. If we were to apply this to a physical environment, we'd employ a cartographer to walk around and map things. We can do that with technology, but we don't know where our gaps are. Are you seeing organizations, and particularly critical industries, saying, look, our SIEM and SOAR is reporting this in. We know it's also picking up this bit here and this bit there. What's missing? What's in those gaps that we don't see? What comes up to an IP gateway, but actually in itself is a whole map of devices behind? Is that level of mapping going on? Does that level of mapping need to be changed and made more automated?
I think definitely needs to be automated. This is where the UEBA component, the user behavioral analytics technology, come in, because you can mathematically calculate deviations to patterns. And this way you can digitally come up with a map that suggests Where are your gaps? This will guide the guys who really know this from an expert perspective. It's such an enormous amount of data that a human being cannot simply... It's too overwhelming. Yes, they might find some holes, but what about the holes they didn't find, or the gaps? This is where technology can help them. Just the way the UEBA works towards a behavior in an organization, you can apply that when devices are behaving abnormally. UEBA technology is going to be one of the answers to this.
But UEBA has been around a very long time, and if I'm honest, has been misused and misrepresented an awful lot over that time. There are some vendors who've clearly marked it up as a golden bullet to solve the problem. It isn't. It's just one tool amongst many. How do we make better use of UEBA?
First of all, you're absolutely right. This is the problem of technology and people wanting to make money. Come up with a technology and you market it to something and you give it a different name. But for instance, UEBA coming up and saying UEBA will replace all SIMs because the machine is going to take over. Well, guess what? All UEBA vendors, each and every one of the top 25, none of them are left as standalone companies and are now realizing if you do not have control of the base data, you cannot do the analytics that UEBA is doing. We are fortunate to be in SIM because at the end of the day, no matter where technology is going, you need to have the data lake that gives you the foundation for your Maslow pyramid of self-realization in terms of analytics. We are in a good position to be at the bottom foundation of this. UEBA now is an example that we are using now, our whole Converge SIM platform of SIM, SOAR, and UEBA, and applying it to SAP environments. Because just as we talk about IoT, application security, SAP, it's a complete blind spot for all companies in the world, full stop, even to SAP themselves. What we can do is take the UEBA technology and apply it to the actual user behavior inside of an application. It's not about whether you are patched correctly and whether the SAP application is up and running. That's security today seen from an SAP person. But to us, it's about how you use SAP. Is there a fraudulent pattern? Do you have a person that can approve for 100,000 euros every month as a manager? But if he approves 10 invoices that are 90,000, it's a pattern that UEBA can recognize. And now all of a sudden you get a business use case where you apply technology that was first developed to make a deviation on machines and just very simple stuff. But now you take this and apply it for a business use case.
But how many people are making that business use case? Once again, we have a technical solution created by technologists for technical people and has been used in a technical sense. You're now saying, yep, it works best when we bring the business case into it, when the business is involved. How do we open that technology and open what we're getting from that technology to the businesses and align that to those business cases? Because that really isn't happening in many, many companies.
I agree. And maybe it's because the foundation of Lockpoint is business driven. We're not a technology company. We didn't say we want to create cool technology. We wanted to provide solution that could protect, if I say on my LinkedIn, protecting hope instead of selling fear. And that's why we go in and say this use case about UEBA for SAP, the reason we got it was a huge insurance company that told us we had a breach in our HR data. We got a fine from Europe. We went to SAP. We cannot help you because our technology cannot discover what happened to you guys. We got in touch with them and we told them how UEBA works and together said, okay, if we apply this to SAP, and then it was like a revelation, oh my God, this is exactly what we've been asking for. Now you have this business use case and you can apply this to all other SAP environments or other applications. Now it's just SAP. And I think it's because, again, that there is not a business focus on this. There is a technology spark in, okay, we create UEBA, but why? Hopefully, with business people putting more pressure on us as vendors, saying, it's fine that you can do this, that, and the other, and you can drive this fast, but where are you going and why? Giving us this pressure means that when we talk about product, we bring in customers into our product council. They can tell us what really matters in terms of protecting their businesses. And this use case about UEBA for SAP is just one example of saying, okay, we need to address something that really matters to them and not just finding a deviation for the sake of the deviation.
This is where I put people on the spot. We've talked about where SIM and SOAR are going, things that we need to do, but in a business context. Let's say you're in a room of business people and we're having this discussion about what does cybersecurity mean for the business. What are three things that they need to think about to make cybersecurity fit for the business, not just fit for the tech teams?
First of all, they need to, from an organizational perspective, put cybersecurity where it has a direct relationship to the top management. They need to take the CISO and put him in the management meetings, preferably with a direct report to the CFO or even the CEO. The places we see this is where things are most effective. When you do it, my suggestion is that there are two types of CISOs, the compliance-driven CISO and data-driven CISO. It's the latter ones that will prevail, because it is a compliance issue, yes, but it's the data-driven CISOs that can provide the business with relevant data. So one thing is very important, bring the CISO into management, give them a budget and power to execute. That's super important. Then it's also basic training, not training in terms of not putting a USB key into your computer. We are sick and tired of hearing this. Everybody should know. I know they still don't. But training in terms of, dear Mr. Sales Director or dear CFO, what is the tangible plan of execution when you get breached? You can talk to any municipality or city in the world. If there is a fire somewhere, everybody knows what to do. There's a fire station and it's a hardwired process of what to do. There is no hardwired processes. What do we do when we get breached? Get that fixed. Do a proper, not just a desktop exercise, but do a proper training on this. It's so important. The third one is to invest in Logpoint. No, that's a joke, but it is always a good idea. But of course it is to assess all the tools that you might have bought over the years. So much has happened over the last 2-3 years that you can consolidate a lot of the tools into a more simple structure. Just like everything else, if you're not a cybersecurity company or you do not have the internal capability, buy consultancy. Like everything else, if you buy a house and you're not an architect, you would not sit down and draw your own house, you would employ an architect. So I would definitely go to an MSSP or consultancy, the big fours, and get some proper advice on what is important and not just buying technology for the sake of technology. That's probably my top three.
If we're going to talk to people and say, MSSPs, these are the consultants, these are the people who will take you forward, how do we enable those MSSPs effectively to do the job? Because like any business, there's a whole raft of tools out there that they can take on, but they struggle with all the same problems we do. Manpower, skills, money, time.
That's a very good question. I see a lot of transformation happening right now because there are a couple terms floating around. There is MSSPs and MDRs, Managed Detection and Response. And then you have other versions of the cybersecurity partner. The important being an MSSP, they need tooling. What we are seeing is that there's a lot of MSSPs that are recognizing that 2 or 3 years ago, they were frustrated about technology, that they had to actually invent the glue for themselves to make everything work. And now with technology, when you have, for instance, our Converge SIM platform, we have the SIM, SOAR, and UEBA in one solution. We actually have a module called Logpoint Director created for MSSPs. By talking to MSSPs and understanding their world, we need to create tools and technology so they again can focus on the problem. Generally speaking, it's recognized that we have 3 levels of security analysts, tier 1, 2, and 3. Our job is to automate the tier 1 analyst. We don't need them. Not that we don't need them as person, but we need them to be focused on the more complex part of things. To what you said in the beginning about the very difficult stuff, how do we interpret this and how do we learn and how do we share? This is what we need MSSPs to do. And then leave it to us and technology to make sure that a phishing attack is stopped in 15 minutes instead of 3 hours and wasting a level 3 analyst to do all this heavy lifting that a computer can do for them. Probably one day we will see that even level 2 will disappear and we will have a level 3 and level 4. This is what I'm seeing, the skill shortage, not only for the poor customers, but also for the MSSPs. We probably have 2 million open positions in cyber today. We will probably have 3 million in 2 years or something like this. The only way we can get to this gap is technology. And I think that we are on our way with AI and maybe even with quantum and the acceleration of how we can compute. This will give some breathing space to us as humanity and society, and the MSSPs will grow very big because this is, coming back to what I said before, a service play. We want to own the technology they use.
I look forward to the business taking control of cybersecurity. I think that's going to be an interesting battle. Jesper, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.